Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new week of Crime at the Family Table. I am one of your hosts tonight, as of every week, pretty much. I am joined here, of course, today by the magnificent, astounding, courageous mamacita of my life, Alyssa. How are you doing, Alyssa?
I am a mamacita. I'm doing all right. For our listeners, I have grand cats. So my cat had 4 kittens, and they are the most adorable little things. But we just came home, and the kittens were missing. And we found them inside of our couch. The kittens are fine. The one kitten keeps, like, charging at me. Like, he keeps charging at my feet. He's so cute, though. Or she. We don't know yet. But, yeah, that's been my evening, just trying to get 4 kittens and 2 toddlers together. But I'm excited for today's episode. I mean, as excited as one can get, given the subject matter. But we're happy to be with you all. Thank you for tuning back into us and listening.
So, I have, like, a little cat story going on myself right now. So, my cat, so, I have a black cat. So, you know, of course his name has to be Lucky because, you know, gotta do the opposite. And so, Lucky has been, for the past, like, week, has been doing this thing. So, we have a chair in my kitchen, at my kitchen table, that I sit in and eat my, like, maybe eat my lunch, maybe eat my breakfast, maybe even dinner, blah, blah, blah. Or maybe a midnight snack, okay? And all of a sudden, I'm noticing the cat will come up to me as I'm sitting on the, like, at the table, and he'll get up on my thigh, like, on my right thigh, like, put his paws there, and it's like he's begging to be pet. Like, he until my hand goes in and starts petting him, he won't stop. And then if I stop petting him, going back to what I'm doing, he'll do it again. He'll just keep doing it until I get my attention. So what I do is I give him a little cat treat. I give him some cat treats. I put him on top of his food, and I walk into the other room because his cat bowl is, like, in the dining room. So now we are coming to the conclusion that my cat might have a cat treat addiction because he is not eating his cat food. He is simply eating the treats that he is receiving. Yes. So the other day I walked downstairs, and in the dining room were the cat treats just in the middle of the dining room floor. Like the bag was not, like, all of them spilled out, but, like, I picked them up and put them on the table. Come and find out that same day, my mom also found the cat with the same cat treats on the floor, which means he used the chair and jerry-rigged himself up there, snatched them off, and tried to drag them away, even though he couldn't open them.
First of all, your cat is a genius. Second of all, I think we need to have an intervention.
I think we do, because, like, he's just been so cute and adorable, and we've been thinking, like, it's something wrong because he's never, like, this wanting of affection. Like, he's never been, like, my cat, you know, lets me pet him every now and again, but not too much. Not too much. So he just, I don't know. What we're trying to do now is wean him off of the cat treats. So we'll probably just do them, like, give them to him, like, every few days, and then, like, not unless his food, but if his food bowl is still full, he not getting no treats because he's leaving the full thing of cat food all day today. All day today, there was no touching of that cat food.
He on that stuff.
He on that. On that kid is sugar. My poor baby. And I love him so much. Like I call him, listen, like, his name is Lucky, but his nickname is McCansom Man. And he is just the cutest thing. But, and, like, this is what he'll do also. Like, he'll stay around my, like, the chair. So, like, I get up, go do something, he'll move a little bit where I'm at and kind of, like, be following me, and he'll sit down and perch. Then he'll move around, but he doesn't move from around the table. I'm guessing he realizes that's where the cat treats are. He's like, well, if I get her to think like I like her pets, she'll just give me some cat treats to get out of her face. And if I keep getting her face, she'll give me more cat treats. I have created a problem. I have created a menace.
That's hilarious. That's why I enjoy cats. They're like, they're conniving in the best way possible.
Yes.
And they're so smart and they're very low maintenance. Like, we just, we see each other.
Yep. Listen, we understand each other on a social level. Mm-hmm. Because I really be catting. Like, I be in the house. I'm a house cat by nature. And, like, this cat understands that. So, like, when I go out, he'll be like, what happened? Where'd she go? He'll be meow. Like, he'll be at my door, scratching at my door. Like, he really misses me. But then when I'm here, he don't want to be bothered. Like, it's crazy. It's a crazy situation.
That sounds like your man.
my man. Oh, speaking, like, child, we have to go over this on our last episode of the season is going to be our shoot the shit episode, y'all. So we definitely will be going over the P. Diddy scandal. I want to look more into that. Like, that's going to be, like, closer to, as we get to the end, like, our last few episodes. Like, I'm going to be looking into that more so I can read maybe, like, what's going on out there, because it's so much. It's so many people involved. On top of that, over the weekend, you know, of course, we had Easter. Woo-hoo. We had very nice Easter, or as the Christians call it, Resurrection Day.
Resurrection Day.
And it was also two other things went on. And of course, two other things that bring up big conversations amongst, you know, the folks. So Beyonce dropped her act two, Cowboy Carter.
This ain't Texas. We don't hold.
Listen. I have gotten through, I think, about 17 songs on the album. Like, it's a lot of songs. And apparently Beyonce recorded 100 songs, though.
I can believe that. She a Virgo. They be doing too much.
She's meticulous. Like, that means that she really, like, this album is the most thought-through album. Like, we're really seeing the process. And also, Beyonce likes us again. So, she's, like, she's starting to accept awards and stuff and new speeches. And, like, maybe she'll do an interview. We never know. And so, of course, with that joy and that beauty of the Cowboy Carter album, of course, conservatives have to always ruin stuff and make things about them. So, on March 31st, since 2009, Trans Visibility Day has been a thing. Has been a thing since the Obama administration, since the first year of the Obama administration. President Biden acknowledged Trans Visibility Day on March 31st. Because it has been on March 31st since March 31st of 2009. Like, I want to preface this. You know what isn't always on March 31st?
Easter.
Because Easter can be in April. It can also be in March.
As the resident Christian, I love Jesus very much. And I also know him well enough to know that he loved everybody. That's what people be leaving out. He loved everybody. I doubt that he's like, oh, you're trying to overshadow my resurrection with trans visibility. He's probably like, yes, let's love our brothers and sisters because I created them all.
And like, it's sad that you even have to have this because at the end of the day, you should be acknowledging them as human beings.
Basically.
You cretins? I'm sure God don't call them cretins. I'm sure.
He'd probably just be shaking his fist. It's really sad because that also leads to discord amongst us and more division and like people who even may be interested in Christianity or Christ. Like, there are a lot of people that are probably very turned off, and that makes me sad. Like I said, as a Jesus girly myself, like.
Yeah, and let's not get it twisted, y'all. There are people of the LGBTQ plus community that are Christians, like that. Some of them people are like freaking pastors' kids. They're PKs, as they call them. Like they have lived life in probably the church, but the things that push you away is like this type of discourse. But of course, conservative discourse about Jesus is always very evangelical, and evangelical Christianity has always been fire brimstone.
Yes.
And it's based in like a very worldly belief of Christ. Like Christ is like fire, brimstone, and hateful versus loving. And like, and even though I'm not a Christian, like I don't practice any religion, I am somebody who's saying if any higher power that you praise is wicked and evil like that, baby, that's the devil. That's a demon. And that, or that's your personal vanity. Who you yourself could be an evil person, because anyone who's anybody who has a brain cell knows that Easter moves every year.
I think it was like April 10th last year.
Yes, like this is my best friend's birthday is March 31st. She says, yeah, like every like 7 years, like six years, she gets her birthday on Easter. Yeah, like, and it's every 7 years specifically, because I think she says like sometimes, like even if her birthday, let's say, is on a Sunday, it may not be Easter Sunday. It's all about like the spring equinox. Like it's about a lot of stuff. So like it's like, I don't know. I feel like people are just so extra and so annoying. And my whole thing is, we're not paying attention to conservative Christian folks out there. Trans Visibility Day, even though I don't know a lot about it, like at its core is based in recognizing trans people as human beings. And we need to acknowledge also the black and brown trans women who have been viciously attacked, abused, killed for being black and trans. And so these type of days are definitely for us to acknowledge those moments. And I feel like conservatives, what they do is they like to make it like they're these ultimate Christ followers when they're the most wicked, evil people that we've ever known. They don't want us to have healthcare. They don't want people in the military to have anything. They don't want women to have bodily autonomy. They don't want men to be anything outside of these quote unquote providers. But then they like they're just so they don't like to move with the times. They like to keep things like they could have, like they want to say the quiet part out loud is they wish they was around when they could have slaves, like, and when women were second class citizens.
It's given very much Handmaid's Tale.
It's given very much like they want to control the entire narrative, and do not let those, you know, things take away from what Easter is about. Like, even if you're not a Christian person, is a time to celebrate, meet with family before it gets hot. Like, I was just telling my mom downstairs that Easter is like the last big back meal that you have before it starts getting hot. You can't eat nothing too heavy. Listen. Or your stomach gonna start rumbling funny.
Because after that is we talking 4th of July. Like,
right.
Father's Day cookout.
Like, actually, Easter is technically the only holiday that would be in April, because they switched to March. There is no holidays in April that we get off for.
That's true.
Yeah, so, yeah, take that vacation, folks. A reminder, because I know the fiscal year is about to come to an end in June. Take the vacation, baby. Don't forget. All right, and with all of that, we're going to get into our episode today. Of course, we'd like to give our disclaimer that today's case does mention murder. And it is dealing with, you know, some heavy topics, dark, sometimes seemingly disturbing things for people. And so we wish that people that, you know, may be sensitive to this type of conversation, please feel free to take a moment to yourself. Do not listen to this episode. Have some tea. Maybe do a little, if this is your night routine that you like to listen to us, have a nice pot of tea, read a book, you know, dim the lights, have a little moment for yourself. Don't worry. We will always be back here again on Thursday. All right?
Okay, folks. Strap yourselves in. Buckle your seatbelts. Arms and legs in the tram car, please. So my term for this week is, I wish we had some like, dun, dun, dun. Insanity defense. So, I'm gonna go through the insanity defense definition and a few like extras. So the insanity defense is primarily used in criminal prosecutions. It is based on the assumption that at the time of the crime, the defendant was suffering from severe mental illness and therefore was incapable of appreciating the nature of the crime and differentiating right from wrong behavior, hence making them not legally accountable for the crime. Now, insanity defense is a legal concept, not a clinical or a medical one. This means that just suffering from a mental disorder is not enough to prove insanity. The defendant has the burden of proof, proving the defense of insanity by a, and I quote, preponderance of the evidence, which is similar to a civil case, but we'll get more into detail with that. It is hard to determine legal insanity and even harder to successfully defend it in court. So, something that I didn't know that I now know while I was doing my research, there are three types of insanity plea. The McNaughton, might not be saying that right, McNaughton insanity defense, also called the right-wrong test. And that's the most common insanity defense in the United States. It's also the oldest and was created actually in England in 1843.
Oh.
So that defense is...
I'm sorry. Pip-pip. Beans on toast.
We gotta go to England. One day, let's speak that. One day we'll do a live show.
Yeah, in England. Hey, and maybe with some like other true crime people. That would be good.
That would be super cool. So the defense is named after Daniel McNaughton, who was under the paranoid delusion that the Prime Minister of England, Sir Robert Peel, was trying to kill him.
Stop.
I couldn't resist.
Like, I'm so sorry. It's just like, it just brings a certain type of like British person out of me. I don't know who it is. Oh,
it was this Sir Robert Peel that I was just like,
it's Sir Robert Peel. It's like, you can't do it.
Our UK listeners are probably like, please stop.
Listen, 2% of our listeners are in the UK, so there's a couple of them.
Sorry, Edward. So when he tried to shoot Sir Peel from behind, he inadvertently shot his secretary, Sir Peel's secretary, Edward Drummond, who died after that. So Daniel McNaughton was put on trial for murder, and to the shock of the nation, the jury found him not guilty by reason of insanity. So after a public outcry at this verdict, the British House of Lords developed a test for insanity that remains relatively intact today, which is the right-wrong test.
That's the one we see most oftentimes when we're looking at like Law and Orders and like Criminal Minds. Like, they utilize that type of insanity. It's generally that one, the most common. I also feel like that kind of makes sense, like how, like, that case making sense of the right wrong, because the whole thing of it is, what beef did he really have with that man? Like, did he really kill him? You can't say insanity when you're killing your husband. Like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of like the social distance. Like, he was crazy. Like, you know, he wasn't all there.
So that defense is the one most commonly used because it is basically because of a mental defect. So if you have, like, let's say schizophrenia, and you're completely in a delusion, you don't know what you're doing, basically. You don't know what you're doing is right or wrong. Like, you don't understand that what you're doing is committing a crime because of this mental disorder. That is the McNaughton defense. Then the second one is irresistible impulse. So here's the example that was given, but really quickly, the irresistible impulse is, because of a mental defect, the defendant cannot control their actions.
Yeah, I don't feel like murder will fall underneath that category.
So Here's the example. It's so interesting. Jolene, because this is the I was like,
No, that bitch knew what she had coming. Listen to the album. You best to watch out, ho.
was like, Jolene. Jolene, who's been diagnosed with paranoia, decides she must cut off all her sorority sisters' hair because they are out to get her. She
Yeah, that.
drives to the sorority house with a taser and scissors in her backpack. Her plan is to subdue each sister with the stun gun and then hack off her hair. So she pulls up to the house. She sees Agnes. I don't know where they got these names from. Agnes, one of her sorority sisters, trip and fall in the parking lot, ripping her cashmere sweater and scraping her chin. So Jolene is like, "Aw, she already just fell. I feel bad for her." So she ignores Agnes and walks toward the building. As she enters, Ashley, a different sorority sister, turns, like, gives Jolene the stank face and says, "What in the world are you wearing? You look like you just rolled out of bed." So Jolene then pulls out the stun gun and shoots Ashley with it. While Ashley is lying on the floor, stunned, Jolene takes out the scissors and cuts Ashley's hair off at the scalp.
She was too stunned to speak. I just, girl,
So,
girl.
Jolene claims she is not guilty for assault and battery of Ashley by reason of insanity. So, if Jolene attacked Ashley in a jurisdiction that recognizes the irresistible impulse insanity defense, because not every state recognizes
Right.
it, she might not be successful. So, Jolene has been diagnosed with paranoia, which is a mental defect or a mental illness. However, Jolene was fully aware that shooting someone with a stun gun and cutting off her hair is wrong because when she met Agnes, she took pity on her. It was like, "Oh, she ripped her sweater and she fell. So I know, like, I feel bad for her. I'm not going to do this thing that I know is wrong to her."
Right, which means it wouldn't fall into the right wrong category because she understands that
She understood what she
messed
was
up.
doing was wrong. So, in addition, Jolene's choice not to attack Agnes indicates she has control over her actions. So, Jolene is aware of the difference between right and wrong and had the will to commit this crime. So, she could not claim insanity under the irresistible impulse
I feel
act
like
because
this
she knew what
like
she was doing.
I feel like this scenario is from like 1980, like or the 1970s, because it's no way that these are 2020 adults.
So the next one is from a case from 1982. Okay, so we have the McNaughton defense, which says because of a mental defect, the defendant does not know that they're committing a crime. They don't know that it's wrong. They're completely unaware of everything. Irresistible impulse is because of a mental defect. The defendant cannot control their actions. The next one is substantial capacity. Now that one is because of a mental defect, the defendant lacks substantial capacity to appreciate criminality of conduct. So, I'll explain. Substantial capacity. So, in 1982, John Hinckley successfully claimed insanity using the substantial capacity test in his federal trial for the attempted murder of then President Ronald Reagan. So
He
he.
said he didn't succeed. Right?
No, he successfully pleaded insanity in that
No, I'm
case.
saying he didn't succeed in killing that man.
No.
And we've all been suffering for it ever since.
Say, and Reaganomics is still crippling us to this day.
He's burnt. He's
So
pit roasted in hell. Oh,
listen.
continue. Sorry.
Because of mental defect, the defendant lacks the capacity to conform conduct to the law. So he lacks the capacity to obey the law. Then there's a few other ones, but they're not rec I think they're only recognized in like Rhode Island and Kentucky. Like two very specific places these defenses are only recognized in. And of course you can be what's the word I'm looking for? You can be deemed mentally incompetent to stand trial.
Right. We saw that with the case with, oh my gosh, the cult mom, the Mormon cult mom. Mm-hmm. Her case kept getting delayed, not just because of the pandemic, but because each time they tried to bring her in front of court, she was just like, she wasn't able to cooperate in her own defense.
Yep. So we've seen examples of this, and we probably didn't even realize this is what we were watching. Right. So you have a person that's pleading insanity. A psychiatrist then comes in as like an expert in the matter. So the role of the psychiatrist, they do a standard evaluation procedure of all the people who plead insanity defense, which is absolutely necessary. Unfortunately, till this day, there's not a standardized procedure in our country. Like, there's nothing that is the same across the board. It's like, this psychiatrist might do this evaluation or procedure, this one might do a different assessment, things like that. There's no, we're all doing the same thing across the board, and it should be.
I mean, I think that one of the things that could be standardized is, maybe it's because, like, maybe the mental illness they have to look at, because if the person is claiming some form of mental illness and, like, they might not even have a quote-unquote history of it, then they have to do, like, the test for that mental illness.
True.
And, like, so it's not going to be standardized versus maybe a schizophrenia one where, like, maybe even if you have a history of it, we can have a history of, like, hey, like, this person is quote-unquote poor, they don't have access to their medication, they don't have ability to maintain medication, they're far away from their families who could take care of them, they're not in any type of care facility, or they don't stay in a care facility long because of the schizophrenia paranoia. So, like, a history can be kind of garnered from that, but if you're someone who commits a crime and it's kind of out the blue, like, for example, maybe the sorority sister situation, onset of mental illness is sometimes, I think, between the ages of 18 and 20 something. So
for schizophrenia and, like, bipolar, it's like that 19, yeah, like, 20, 21 range.
Right. So that could have been her first bout of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe never have had a breakdown beforehand. So you have to look at her test a little different.
Very true. Okay. Psychiatrists are often called for conducting mental health evaluations and treatment. A psychiatrist has to assess on mental state at the time of the offense. So they're looking to see if you were at a diminished mental state while you were committing this crime. And of course, like you just said, they have to assess the history of the illness, things like that. So they're looking for, a psychiatrist is looking for things like planning. How long did you plan this crime? Was there an accomplice? How did you get a weapon? Like, did you go out of your way to get a weapon? The date and time of the crime? Did you get a vehicle to escape? So they look at planning. They look at your capacity to avoid detection. So are you waiting until the proper time? Like, are you waiting for a space to clear out before you attack somebody? Are you taking the victim to a secluded place? Are you using gloves? Do you have a disguise, like the gentleman who was in blackface? Yeah. Are you hiding your weapon? Like, are you concealing it and then boom, pulling it out? So they're looking for things like that as well. They're looking for disposing of evidence. Are you wiping off fingerprints and blood? Are you bleaching surfaces? Are you burning your clothes? Burying things?
Hiding your body? Yeah, because there's intent, there's planning, there's culpability in that. Like, they can see that there's, like, if all of those are present, I feel like you cannot plead insanity, because what's going to end up happening is you are just saying, like, oh, like, I'm just a regular person that's committing a crime. Because if you can plan, get a getaway driver, have an accomplice, y'all can have full frame of thought of how you're going to do a crime, that's not an insanity plea.
You are fully aware of what you're doing.
You know it.
They're looking for escaping the crime scene, lying to the police, performing complex tasks, which require that cognitive ability. I did want to mention really quickly, a famous case where the insanity defense was used was one good sis, Lorena Bobbitt.
Lord.
She used, if you do not know who Lorena Bobbitt is, there are plenty of documentaries, ID channel, podcasts that have talked about Lorena Bobbitt. She's very well known. Lorena Bobbitt was acquitted after going to court for cutting off her then husband's penis. She argued that she suffered years of abuse and was sexually assaulted by her former husband, John Bobbitt, which resulted in her snapping and cutting off his penis. The jury found her not guilty by reason of temporary insanity, and she was ordered by a judge to go through a 45-day evaluation period in a mental hospital. After 6 years of marriage, John and Lorena finally finalized their divorce. But she was able to plead temporary insanity. She had a moment after enduring years and years of abuse. She just snapped.
Within their marriage, he committed spousal rape. Yeah. So, which at this time, I do not believe was considered an offense. Like, for many people, like, a lot of people back in the day, like, I don't realize, a lot of stuff is real modern. So, mm-hmm. spousal rape was not 100% considered a thing because they say, like, within the marriage, you have to give up sex.
Yep.
That's a whole other conversation for another day. So a lot of people that were maybe on juries at that time would not have understood that, hey, like, she's, like, spousal rape and things like that. Like, so they brought up the spousal rape. They did bring it, but they brought it up in within the whole of, like, her abuse story and her feelings of being trapped, because she also wasn't from, I don't think she was from America.
No, I think she was from, like, a Latin country.
Yeah, like,
I remember Chile. Correctly.
Yeah, so really it's like they had to bring it up in the whole of the story. So she saw his penis as like his weapon.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
Very interesting story. I think I watched the Lifetime movie. I want to say it was with the guy from he played Superman, like when Superman was on TV. He's really cute too. I'm pretty sure. It's a Lifetime movie, so if you're interested, there's plenty of information out there. There's a Lifetime movie about it, documentaries, everything.
Yeah, like, it's one of the top cases in, like, true crime.
Yep. It's something else.
It's in rap songs. It's literally, like, it's everywhere. It's a pop cultural phenomenon.
A pop cultural reference. That's what I was looking for. It was a joke for, I remember growing up and Lorena Bobbitt was like a joke you said to your husband, or a joke that men would be like, all right, for she go Lorena Bobbitt on you.
Yeah, so. Listen, that SNL did the skit, like, it was crazy. Like, and you know, when you get older and you realize the full story, you're just like, good for her.
Period. So today's case, that ties into the insanity plea, is the tragic murder of Mia Wilson. So if you are not familiar with who Mia Wilson is, she was born November 12th, 1999. She was a cheerleader, a rapper. She dreamed of having a dance studio, and she and her cousins were in a music group that they called Girls, with a Z, of course, Girls in the Hood.
Period.
So, their album, which was called Fake Shit, was released after Nia passed away. So the group had planned to reshoot the video, but they didn't release it until after she passed. So if you're interested in supporting, Fake Shit is now on iTunes. Nia Wilson, who was a very pretty girl, was known as being talented with makeup. Her nickname was actually PG, which stood for pretty girl. She was the daughter of Ansar El Muhammad and Alicia Grayson. She is the youngest of six sisters. So she has a sister, Malika, Latifa, Nashaya, and Tashaya, and two brothers. Sorry, y'all, I had to sneeze. So her cousin, Tajane, also spoke about her character. And everybody has always said just how great she was and how kind she was. And the wild part about it is Nia often spoke and had the conversation with her family members on what she wanted them to do in the event that something happened to her or if somebody ever hurt her.
Wow.
So the cousin and Nia spoke and told him to not let anyone who hurt her get away with it. And this is, it was just so interesting to me. This young girl already, unfortunately, was having this thought of like, something could potentially happen to me. But if something does happen to me, don't let them get away with it. And of course, in 2018, there were a lot of things going on as far as racial, social injustices. You know, people were getting killed left and right. Who was 2018? Was it, oh my God, I can't think of his name. Oh my God, I can't think of his name. Not Tamir Rice.
No.
With the hoodie. I can see his face so clearly.
It could have been Trayvon Martin.
Wasn't that around 2018?
No, it was 2012.
That was 2012? It was. You're right, because I was in school and we marched. And that's unfortunate that there have been so many other deaths like that have happened. That's just like pick a year from that point until now.
Over the last 12 years, literally, like we've just, it's kind of like it's never ending, it feels like.
But
Whew.
she was aware of such things. So they had that conversation. Her other cousin, Byron, stated that Nia would have wanted more than one protest. He remembers her saying, "Justice is never served when black people were killed." It's crazy.
So young and having to think of stuff like that, but that'd be the truth.
It's the reality of the world we live in, unfortunately. So that's just a little background on Nia, the type of thought process she had, the dreams that she had, that she was, and not only dreams, like they were moving forward, they were taking action to get fake shit released, and they released it, and it's on iTunes. So on July 22nd, 2018, three sisters, Nia, her sister Latifa, and her sister Tashia, I hope I'm saying her name right, it might be Tashia, were attacked by a man wielding a knife. Now, this man was later identified as John Cowell, but the three girls were getting off of the BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit train. So, like for us, it'd be the subway. Or I think, what's in New York? MARTA? Metro?
Yeah, Metro.
So, you getting off the train. They were getting off at MacArthur Station in Oakland, California. She was 18 at the time. Nia Wilson died after her throat was slashed. I know what you're thinking. They're on a train. It's public transportation. How the heck did this happen? But it happened. Her throat was slashed. Her older sister Latifa was stabbed in the neck, but Latifa survived. Tashia was not physically harmed at all. He didn't even go after her. So this man was identified as the suspect immediately following the attack, and he was caught the next day. I know. He had been paroled in May of 2018 after serving time for second degree robbery. So he did what he did in July. He had just got paroled in May after serving time for second degree robbery, and he had previous charges for assault and possession of methamphetamine. So initially, of course, they were thinking that this was racially motivated. That started protests at MacArthur Station and online. John's parents stated their belief that the attack was possibly motivated by his mental illness. And it makes me just think how these things have happened when the perpetrator was a black person. We don't put mental illness on the table. He was a terrible person. Let's bring up his criminal history. But for this particular person, mental illness is the first thing
Right.
that is mentioned.
My issue though is that there is a clear sign that there is methamphetamine use. And for me, drug induced like mental illness would not warrant a insanity plea because And even though, like, how I feel about drug use, like, it not, you know, addiction not being a choice, but, like, the thing is, the way the, like, I feel like a lot of courts I've seen is that the use of drugs in order and that causing psychosis is, like, the choice, in a sense. They think of mm-hmm. it like, hey, you chose to use these drugs. You don't get to now plead insanity when the ish that happens with drugs comes to be.
Exactly. So
this is very interesting. This is very interesting.
So authorities have yet to establish a motive, but they have come to the conclusion that there's no evidence that it was racially motivated. So, of course,
well, at least that other sister being left untouched, and the possibility that there were other Black people on the sub, on the BART.
There were plenty of other Black people because I saw the actual video. You can see. You can see the girls on the train. You can see him. He was watching them for a while. And yeah. You can see him. He's got, like, I think he had, like, a little backpack. He's got his, like, hoodie on. You can see something is in his, like, hoodie pocket. And he's mm-hmm. watching them. So they get off of the train. There's also a woman who has her baby, like, in a stroller.
Mm-hmm.
And that's getting off the train. She's got her baby, like, with a blanket over her or whatever. So they get off of the train. And they, of course, they don't show you the full extent of what happened, but basically, he stabs Nia, and I believe he stabs the sister in the neck. The sister, for a minute, didn't know what was going on. I think she just saw her baby sister go down. And her sister, you know, Nia's like this thing is happening to me. So the woman right. with the stroller grabs her baby's blanket and tries to apply pressure to Nia because he slashed her throat. So she's trying to apply pressure. The other sister, Nashaya, is like screaming for like help. And it almost seems like he just walks away.
Yeah.
And he kind of gets caught up in the melee of the other people like panicking and running around. So he kind of pretends like, oh my God, like I'm also a person that just witnessed this, and then he's even seen on camera, like, pointing the police to the direction. He's like, hey, something happened over there, a girl was stabbed. So you were well aware, sir. You know what you were doing.
There's some after the fact trying to clear things up. The other thing I want people to understand is the reason, one of the other hard things to prove in court, regardless of the Sandy plea, is racial motivation for crimes. Hate crimes are extremely difficult to prove because a hate crime has to have no prior engagement between the two parties, so between the perpetrator and the victim. So, for example, your neighbor, even if you're two different races, cannot technically commit a hate crime against you, even if they use hate speech in a crime against you, because it can be concluded that you have had prior dealings that mitigated that situation, that came prior, that caused that person to have this reaction. Even though there is a racial tone to it, it is not necessarily because they hate gay people, Black people, Muslim people. It is simply y'all could have had prior engagement. The prior knowledge of that person takes away from hate crimes. And I understand, like, it's very difficult. It's hard. And even though, like, sometimes we also want to say, like, oh, like, well, is a lot of people on the train that could have been Black? Like, sometimes, like, especially we don't know his thought process, he could have been thinking, like, I'll just get these Black girls. Like, I can't get everybody.
Yeah.
I'll get these. So, when you're doing things that dealing with people of opposing races, opposing sexual orientations, things like that, they're, like, seem very hate crime coded. You got to understand it is extremely difficult to take on those cases. And civil rights attorneys, civil rights attorneys, people that deal with hate crimes have a difficult time pleading those cases. They're very, because they're federal cases. Like, you're getting from the state now to the federal level. Like, we saw that with a few crimes committed by police over the last, again, 12 years, where their cases would go from just regular, like, okay, you committed a murder, mm-hmm. to now you're going to get charged with a hate crime. But a lot of them don't go to the hate crime level. So it's hard. It's very hard.
It's kind of like a he said, she said, basically. Because you could always be like, I'm not racist. There's no history of me being racist.
Right.
So But from the evidence that they gathered, they said it wasn't racially motivated. And it's just unfortunate because these sisters were just coming from their aunt's party, and they had just gotten on the train. They were in the process of transferring trains in order to get home. And then this guy just walks up, slashes her throat, stabbed the sister in the neck, and he just kind of like creeped back into the crowd.
That's scary.
And you can, so the police were able to identify him based on, like I said, the security cameras at the scene. They found a backpack with his ID inside. And of course, witnesses saw him wiping the knife clean and fleeing after the attack. So you've got witnesses. He left his backpack. When the footage that I saw after he pointed the cops in the direction of everything that was going on, he then went to, it looked like a dumpster. He like took his backpack off. He took the hoodie off. He like changed his clothes real quick. So he was fully aware and cognizant of what he was doing, and he was trying to flee the scene.
He didn't stay. He wasn't trying, like he wasn't of the mind to get try to get caught, because why are you wiping the blood off the knife? Why are you pointing police in the direction of the people? Why are you trying to blend in and camouflage yourself with concerned citizens? Why are you getting rid of the evidence?
All things that would prove you weren't insane when you did this at all. You knew, you were fully aware of what you were doing. So let me tell you a little bit about BART Station. In 5 days, three unrelated homicides, including Nia's murder, occurred at the BART Station. So it's crazy. Hours after Nia's funeral, another two people were stabbed at the MacArthur BART Station, and eventually they shut the station down. BART, the BART people, I don't know, I don't know the word I'm looking for. Whoever's in charge has been planning to make security improvements, they said, well before Nia's death. The plan had involved like a massive security camera improvements. And they said they would need like $15 million over the course of 4 years to upgrade the system to digital, which is like the system is not digital. What have we been doing this whole time? They would need $1.3 million per year to monitor the technology and $4.9 million to install a physical security information system or PSIM. The plan will cost $28 million total to implement. And just so we are aware, the PSIM, like I said, is a physical security information system. And it's a category of software that is designed to integrate multiple unconnected security applications, enable automation of workflows and processes, and to provide control over devices through a unified user experience. So they're just trying to streamline the whole security process and trying to get everything like unified. So hopefully they have gone forward with this plan, but unfortunately, because they had an out basically an outdated system, they weren't able to probably prevent a lot of these unfortunate events that have happened at the MacArthur station. But like I said, he didn't give a motive for the attack. The Wilson sisters told reporters they had never seen John Cowell before the stabbing.
I'm gonna tell you, okay, remember, I'm gonna go back to one thing you said. Remember talking about station killing at the time? Oscar Grant happened in 09. That was a very significant, the Fruitville BART station murder of Oscar Grant the third.
That was at the
20
BART
year
station.
old, yes, 22-year-old black man, Michael B. Jordan, played him in a movie called Fruitville Station. Amazing movie, really well retelling of the story. Oscar Grant, young black man, leaving New Year's party, is killed by police at the BART Fruitville Station.
Shut down BART. Like I mean, I know they need
Right.
a transit system, but it's like, what is going on there? Like, and why is everything happening at BART? But speaking of BART, I'm sorry, y'all. Give me a second. So, speaking of the BART station, John Cowell, 4 days before he stabbed Nia, was confronted for not paying his fare. In 2016, he had been found guilty of second-degree robbery after he brandished what? A knife and a fake gun in a Lucky Store at El Cerrito Plaza after a security guard confronted him over stealing. He was arrested at El Cerrito's BART station and was sentenced to 2 years in federal prison. And like I said before, he had been released on parole that May of 2018, just a few months before he stabbed Nia. He's been arrested for petty theft, illegal possession of tear gas. He's giving terrorists possession of an illegal smoking device and drug possession. But these charges were dismissed due to the robbery conviction. He started having brushes with the law at age 18 when he was arrested for allegedly beating up a man and the man's daughter. So he has a criminal history of I would say violent crime.
He's a violent offender. Like, he's a very violent offender.
He's been to federal prison. Like, illegal possession of tear gas? What were you planning to do with the tear gas?
Why do you have tear gas? Tear gas is a very specific. That seems like he's trying to cause bedlam wherever he is, because tear gas may be something. And I mean, it's not fun in public spaces, but if you're doing it on the tight quarters of a subway train,
Again, it's giving terrorism.
it's given potential terroristic intentions, or but terrorism again, that's another double one, because you gotta find like the political things. He just wanted to cause mayhem.
It sounds like it, and I could see him, had he not been arrested for this, he probably would have gone on to just cause more and more and build up and build up into something really huge.
So I'm gonna say this. I think maybe one of his big intentions was probably to have tear gas, probably while people were in like the bedlam and stuff of like, moving around, he would commit stabbings.
That makes so much sense. Like, so what is so in 2016, Kaiser Permanente Richmond Medical Center filed a restraining order against him for threatening to kill one of their employees. In 2015, his family filed a restraining order against him after he allegedly tried to enter their home while under the influence of drugs. Later that same year, he was arrested for possession of a controlled substance after he was found high on meth amphetamine and was sentenced to 90 days in jail. He was convicted of battery in 2013. In 2009, he was arrested and charged with felony assault for beating up a 51-year-old man and punching, that's where the
Why
guy at
is
his
this
door.
street? Like, why is he on the street?
Both in Alameda and Contra Costa counties, his arrest record lists charges of assault with a deadly weapon, possession of a controlled substance, vandalism, and petty theft. So he was arrested on July 23rd, 2018. He was actually homeless before he attacked Nia. It's wild.
Yeah, like it seems like this was a man of like this was bound to happen because he was getting worse. Like it like you can't say this is not a shocking crime. Like yes, it's shocking, but like it's not shocking he committed such a crime because it's just been building to this.
Like he has a rap sheet, not even sheet. He's got a rap Excel spread. I don't know. Like it's
Longer than my
and like
arm. Like
listen.
that thing be singing, and the fact of the matter is that his family can say insanity, but like in no, nowhere in this do I hear about him getting potential help. Like where is this like where is the support like where is his help where is getting him into, like, what is happening here? Like, he's just being allowed to just roam. I understand you can't control, like, when somebody's dealing with, like severe mental illness, you cannot really control their behaviors. And maybe they themselves were scared, but I feel like some form of, you know, notice should have been put out. Something, like, police should have, something, because this is ridiculous.
But he was arrested on July 23rd at Pleasant Hill BART station at 6:27 p.m. A witness is reportedly responsible for them apprehending him. The witness saw him at the station and called the police.
So he was at another BART station.
He can't stay out of BART stations. Yeah, he was at a different one in Pleasant Hill.
He didn't think himself the block is hot. He really thought he got away with it. That's insane.
He's homeless. He was homeless. So it's like, you really could have just blended in. Like, how were they going to find you?
Yeah, like, he could have went to one of them tent towns, like, them tent area places. Like, he could have went anywhere. Like, what, like, that leads me to believe a little bit of insanity, because the self-preservation thing isn't there. Like, he really not, like, yes, immediately after the crime, but he just really didn't try to continuously hide. Like, this is the next day.
Yeah. So she calls. He was then booked on charges of first-degree murder, assault with a deadly weapon, and violation of parole. His arraignment was scheduled for July 26th, so they were quick. But it was postponed until August 22nd, and he was held in Santa Rita Jail in Dublin without bail. So fast forward, we're now in August. Alameda County prosecutors added a charge of lying in wait. The added charge meant if he was convicted, he would face life without parole or even the possibility of the death penalty.
So he would probably be, but he would be in pretty much solitary confinement for 24 hours.
Yep. So his lawyers requested more time to review the evidence, and the plea entry date was postponed until September of 2018. Mm-hmm. They continue to further delay entering a plea. The plea entry was delayed until October 26th of 2018. So specifically, the defense was waiting for the prosecution to release the video of the stabbing in order to inform their plea. Yeah. So on October 11th, 2019 now, Judge Kevin Murphy agreed to seal a future motion to dismiss the case submitted by Kyle's public defender, and the motion was to be argued in open court proceedings on November 22nd of 2019. So he was expected to enter a plea on November 22nd. The court found him competent to stand trial in July of 2019. So now we've gone from July of 2018 to now we're in July of 2019.
And we're inching closer to the pandemic. Yep. We're him close, like, that is the craziest thing. Like, speedy trial, but two years can go by without a trial ever touching the court.
Real fast. It's that's crazy. So after three court-appointed doctors evaluated him, one of the evaluations found Kyle incompetent, one found incompetent, and the third evaluation could not come to a conclusion.
Yes, the evaluation for competency does need to be standardized then, because what the hell? How does three doctors find three different things?
Exactly. Finally, on July 17th, 2020, we're two years out.
We're all home.
He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So, but wait, there's more. So there was media coverage, the public outcry. There were celebrities that got involved. The hashtag Nia Wilson, hashtag say her name, and hashtag justice for Nia Wilson went viral on Twitter July 23rd of 2018. Anne Hathaway spoke about it, Rose McGowan, Tracee Ellis Ross, Bruno Mars, Viola Davis, Common, Janelle Monáe, Jada Pinkett Smith, Sean King, who called for the attacker's immediate arrest. And Kehlani, the singer Kehlani, called the attacker a white supremacist.
Yeah, she's from the Bay.
Steph Curry helped to raise over $21,000 during a game for young Bay Area athletes. which he streamed on his Facebook page. Activists have widely critiqued the coverage of the murder from Fox affiliate KTVU after the station released a photo of Wilson holding a gun instead of the many other available photos of the teen. So, of course.
Yeah, even as a victim. Even as a victim.
She's like, not the perfect victim. It's just like...
A victim is a victim is a victim. And at the end of the day, you don't get to decide. Like, especially something that has shit to do with shit. Was she holding a gun when her throat was slit?
But here's the kicker. So later, ABC reported that the photo was actually of her holding a gun-shaped phone case and not an actual gun.
I remember that. Yes, 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 yes. And it was critiqued that even that was being sold because they said, you know, how people like to get. Yeah. Yeah, yep. I remember.
By the National Association of Black Journalists, the Bay Area Black Journalists Association, and the Robert C. Maynard Institute for Journalism Education. They critiqued that. Anchor Frank Somerville later issued an apology for the image.
Yeah, because it's disgusting. It's the same thing as like when they like show Trayvon Martin like in grills and like making him look thuggish, and it's just like he literally was walking, y'all.
He literally went to the corner store to grab something type time.
They did that with Tamir Rice playing with a toy gun. Like, they tried to villainize us even before our bodies get comfortable in the ground. We are victimized. Like, this is why, you know, there is, when we're dealing with victimization, like, and crime, there is, you know, the double victimization that people feel, like the loss of the loved one and the victimization that they feel like retelling the story in court. But Black people receive a third type of victimization. It's a victimization by the media and a smear campaign in order, because you know you're starting to think, like, are you on the side of these people who took my life?
Because I could have sworn I was the victim of murder here. And it's wild. I'm the victim of
murder who did nothing. Like, I am the victim here. And the thing about it is it's really sad. Like, you know, it's really sad because you don't even feel like you get a fair shot and an understanding of, like, what is the character assassination here? Like, they had to look for those images. I know there was an intern that was assigned to look for those images to smear this girl's because name.
Social media, everybody has social media, especially if you are a particular age, and she was only 18, 19. So, you know, there was plenty of pictures for them to be able to choose from on her, probably Instagram or her Facebook, or just asking her family for a nice picture of her. She was a very beautiful girl. She had a lot of pictures to choose from, and the fact that they chose that one is just
beyond me. And the fact of the matter is, it has nothing to do with nothing.
She literally was minding her business,
probably talking to her sisters on the train, like, or not talking to them because they just had a worn out time at their aunt's like party, and they're just trying to get home. Like, what are y'all doing?
Because it was about 9:30 at night. So they was, you can see on the video, they was just chilling. Like, just on the train, about to go home.
Right, like, what gives you the right to smear her name? And it's just like, this is where you can critique, like, this is the critique of journalism, is the biases that exist in journalism and the sheer biases that exist within Fox Network as an organization. It's always Fox Network. It's never no one else. It's always Fox Network. They're the first names to be brought up in a conversation when it's talking about the smearing of Black and brown people names into the mud. It's crazy.
So, of course, there were critiques of the cable news sources like CNN, like you said, Fox News, MSNBC, for not spending enough time on this case, despite the public outcry and the on-the-ground coverage that was happening. There were national public protests. There were vigils held. Like I said, there were the hashtags. People were at the BART station carrying signs with Nia's name on it and chanting, "No justice, no peace." Some young activists they like came together for an event called Youth Speak, Adults Listen, where they discuss feeling unsafe in public and how Nia's death exemplifies like this fear. There were like conversations internationally on racial violence. At the MacArthur BART station, there are two large publicly created monuments to Nia, including large displays of flowers, balloons, candles, public performances. Bike rider Najari Smith, co-founder of Rich City Rides, attached speakers and a microphone to his bike and dedicated a ride to Nia. There were like 30 people in the group bicycle ride dedicated to her.
That's that summer. Sweet.
Yeah. So it was really dope. Like, people really were trying to bring awareness, and it just kind of drove home what she was saying. Like, if something happens to me, y'all better make some noise. So eventually, Nia's family sued BART for failing to protect Nia and her sister, specifically because transit officers had caught John Cowell skipping fares a few days before the attack. And because of his previous arrest at a BART station, Nia's family is stating that Kyle should not have been allowed back at the stations. I mean, hello.
Like, at the bare minimum, he shouldn't have been allowed. Like, the BART station is his literally, like, his stomping ground. Like, he need not be there ever. It needs, like, to be like a bolo on that man. Like, you see him, don't do it.
Like, I feel like he...
he is diverted away from the station.
And he was there 4 days earlier and got caught for skipping his fare. It should have been like, oh, this you? Security, escort this man out. So, the Arns law firm is preparing the suit, claiming John Kyle's violence was foreseeable and preventable. The claim also contends that 2 weeks before he attacked the sisters, he threatened to attack two other BART passengers, but BART employees were not available to take a report.
This is what I'm talking about. There are failures. There are misses. There are a lack of... Where are the transit police? Where are the BART police? Because we have SEPTA police. So I'm not understanding where the police. So I think, okay, also, I think the BART station, like the BART train, is almost in line with kind of like the L train here. Not necessarily the subway, because I don't know if they really have quote unquote subways in California. I don't think they go underground.
It probably is more like RL, yeah.
Yeah. Like in comparison, which, and you know how RL be. That's Bedlam. That's like, that's crazy.
So the suit also alleges that Latifa Wilson, Tashia Wilson, and El Muhammad suffered physical injuries and emotional distress for witnessing the attack. Specifically, the family is seeking financial compensation for Nia Wilson's death, Latifa Wilson's injuries, and the family's emotional distress, in addition to improved safety measures in order to prevent further attacks from taking place. And I hope they get every penny.
Every dollar, every cent. Get all that money. Because one, you literally, like, her life is completely changed from this. Like,
yeah.
She's her sister. She's, like, the people, like, her, the sisters, they suffered so much. In a matter of seconds, they don't have a sister anymore. In a matter of seconds, like, it's just, what? Come on. Give them the money, BART. You got the money.
Your sister is gone. You get stabbed in the neck. You have to literally watch her die. Like, the trauma, the PTSD is just, it's, yeah, cough up the coin. So the last part of this, which is like, what? He appealed, John Lee Cowell, appealed. You gotta be careful with them John Lees. That Lee middle name.
Listen. That might be the name that might be need to be banned, because it's all that self fulfilling prophecy, that foreshadowing be happening.
John Lee Cowell appealed his first degree murder conviction in the fatal 2018 stabbing, but the first appellate district of California did not buy his attorney's claims of an insanity defense.
You can't just use that later. Like,
he pleaded He pleaded guilty. I mean, he pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity when his trial started in 2020. But the jury was not swayed. They were like, you thought you could, but you couldn't. They found him guilty of murder and attempted murder in March of 2020. And then after that, the world shut down. And Kyle was sentenced to life in prison a few months later.
As he should. So yeah, another thing, y'all, like it was not even he the option really wasn't he wasn't gonna go free for her murder. He was gonna be sentenced to, like, if you can plead insanity, especially for murder, you're still guilty of the crime because the act did happen, but you just have to you go to a mental institution. So you'll be institutionalized, which people find a little too cushy for them, for their liking. So you don't, yeah, they yeah. Prison is a little bit better option.
So his attorneys appealed the case to the, like I said, to the First Appellate District of California, which is a panel of three judges. And like I said, he lost his appeal, and his convictions and life sentence remain intact.
As they should. May he rot in piss, okay?
He claimed, so there is no shortage of evidence. Like, we've discussed all this evidence that he was an unstable individual. He claimed on the stand that the Wilson sisters were aliens and had to be removed from the courtroom on multiple occasions over profanity-laden outbursts.
Yeah, so it's given very much. He's trying to do the second thing, the not the knowing right or wrong, but the which the one is like with Jolene, the idea of
Irresistible
impulse,
in both.
the impulse defense, like he was in. But what about impulses told you to kill the aliens? Like, I, sir, please spare me, because being so, I think, like, something that I think needs to be seen, which I think, like, I don't know, like, if people maybe didn't understand it, being mentally ill does not constitute an insanity defense.
Yep.
You can be mentally ill, but still be cognizant enough to have committed a crime. And you need to be held accountable for that. So, to jail you go, to prison you lay, may your ass never be free. Bye-bye, John Lee Cloud. Goodbye.
Because they were not buying it. They were not buying
Right.
it.
I
The
don't buy
appeals court did not buy it.
No one buys it. Also, I kept having you, like, I'm sorry I let you say that word. It's appellate court.
Oh, that's what that word is. I've heard it, but I never knew it was spelled like that. I think I
Yeah,
was
one
thinking
of the
it was the
words gave me
state.
a ring up, but I knew when you see something in court and it's like panel of judges is appellate court.
Oh my goodness. Well, listeners, now I know, and I will not say appellate. Oh, that
Was like,
embarrassing. Embarrassing.
he's an Appalachian.
Appellate court.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, that's what I was thinking. So the appeals court was unmoved because they saw the video evidence. It showed an intentional murder, and there was ample evidence that he then tried to cover up his crime and get rid of the evidence.
Right.
So in the 86-page decision, appellate justices ruled that his John's refusal to come to court or obey courtroom decorum didn't affect his defense. It's like, you don't want to show up, you want to be acting out and having these outbursts. That means nothing to us. Thank you and good night.
It reminds me of what's his name case that just recently happened, like the one where the guy crashed into that parade, crashed his car into the parade.
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of that. Just because you have outbursts, don't mean you get to plead insanity.
And it reminds me of, is it Young Thug? The slime?
Yeah.
That whole thing where where the video was circulating of the young man just like having these random outbursts. Sir, we see that you're trying to plead insanity. It's not gonna
Right.
work. It's not what we think it is. It's so much deeper than
Right.
just being like, hey, I'm trying to pretend to be crazy. It's like, it's
And
so much deeper than
California,
that.
a million one times, because you gotta remember, y'all, California has a lot of like serial killers.
Yep.
A lot of serial killer cases go through California. They done seen the insanity plea more times than you can count. You gotta come better than that.
Oh, you gotta be quicker than that.
You got to. Outburst ain't gonna do it, baby. Ain't gonna ride on no chains. You might be able to do that in Philly, but you can't do that. You might need to do that in Pennsylvania.
Maybe.
You can't do that in California.
So, thankfully, the evidence from the surveillance video was so overwhelming. It showed him tracking the Wilson sisters from the time they got on the train at Concord. Afterwards, he took steps to get away with the crime, like disposing of the knife, fleeing the scene, changing his clothes, all which proved he knew he'd done something wrong. And under California law, proving insanity is a high bar. You literally just said it. As one has to prove that the defendant could not discern between right and wrong at the time of the crime. Prosecutors also contended that John Cowell intentionally played up his volatility in order to get off. We all know he was trying to play crazy in order to get away with this and not have to do jail time.
All right.
So for now, he will remain.
Shit. And his family is full of shit. They believe the okie doke. I don't. Neither did the courts. And to remember, to jail he goes, to prison he lay.
He will now remain at California State Prison in Sacramento, where he will serve out the remainder of his life sentence, pending any further appeals. He ain't gonna get it. He did it.
Yeah, like he's gonna try to take that to the state Supreme Court, and they going like one. Here's once he gets denied by the state Supreme Court, there's nowhere else for him to go. He goes nowhere else. So may he rock.
Listen, have fun in there with your celly.
Cellmate, yeah, because you're done. Nia, what a bright future she would have had, and her love for her, like, the people and, like, the love for her family was very apparent in the life she lived.
Mm-hmm.
And just the brightness and just the air of love around her was contagious, really. Like, you could just see it. Like, she had the most contagious smile. Like, you look at pictures of her and she's smiling, you smile.
She was so beautiful, so promising. Like I said, their song is on iTunes. Run it up, stream it, buy it, so that we can support this family, we can support these girls, we can support Nia's dream that unfortunately she never got to live out. But
I hope one of her sisters or maybe a friend is able to open a dance studio in her name.
That would be amazing.
Because it could have been 25 now. It would have been like 25 now.
Yeah, that's crazy how time moves that fast. But yeah, that is the show for today. Thank you for listening.
And I want to give a special little shout out to the fact that we've been consistent, you guys. Woo-hoo! Week after week. First season we have ever been this consistent. Look at us, guys. We are, you know, we're getting better on a schedule. We are, I think another thing is what makes it better is the fact that I think in the beginning when we were doing this, life was happening. Like, Alyssa, like, you was having a baby. Like, things. We were starting in a pandemic, like, it was a lot going on, but now we're a little bit more shined and polished,
and we are going to give you all that we've got. We're going to give you more and more each week. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for standing by us through thick and through thin. Thank you for
the little engines that could. We pushing on. The little podcast that could is pushing on, y'all.
We are. But that's a wrap. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.